The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning, everyone. I thought this morning to give a talk, a simple talk perhaps, hopefully, on mindfulness meditation, but to do it in what could be called plain English. And so some of the basic principles or ideas, aspects of mindfulness, and I'll reference them to meditation practice, but it might be more interesting, given it's the holidays, for you to apply them, these principles, to your life outside of meditation, to situations you're going to find yourself in. So for some people, the holidays are stressful times. Family gatherings that some people have are sometimes delightful and sometimes can be challenging. And so you might think about how these principles apply to other areas of your life outside of meditation. So the first principle or aspect of mindfulness is to show up. Just show up. And that has many applications, but for meditation practice, it means you have to show up for your cushion or for your chair. Show up and sit down and meditate. And for some people, that's a huge challenge. Given busy lives or given inertia that we might have, it can be a challenge to figure out to go sit down and meditate. So you got to show up for your meditation. You have to be there. And as it said, mindfulness meditation absolutely doesn't work if you don't do it. So there are people who are wishful thinking meditators. So it might work in some wishing world, but so you got to show up. And I know some teachers, meditation teachers, who in counseling people who say, "I can't find time to sit," will say, "Can you find time to sit down for 1 minute?" "Well, yeah, I can always do that. In 1 minute, I can figure out." Okay, always, every day, commit yourself to sit down in your meditation posture, and just at least to sit down, take your meditation posture. Just do that. And it's a little bit of a trick, because once once you're in the posture, it's like, oh, well, you know, I could probably make 5 minutes of this, and I can probably do 10 minutes, and so it goes on. And but also, I think, aside a little trick like that, I think it's actually helpful for the system to, if you're a regular meditator and you have a kind of a visceral memory, body memory, of being in meditation, being present, being mindful, even getting into the posture for a few seconds kind of reawakens those memories, that visceral kind of memory. And so it kind of it becomes a touchstone to the practice, to the values, to the way of being that the mindfulness develops for people. And then once we sit down on the cushion, show up at least on the cushion, then there's still a process of showing up. And it's quite common for people to sit down to meditate and their mind is somewhere else. Their body's on the cushion, that's fine, but they don't even know that because the mind is in, you know, on vacation someplace, or the mind is in an argument that happened earlier in the day, or some difficulty, or often some fantasy, and one form or the other. And so it can take a while to show up for yourself. And I think that's a big part of mindfulness, is to show up for yourself. Really be here and feel it's valuable to show up, to be present for what our experience is. And it's a training for the mind, where the mind not only gets trained, kind of like a muscle gets trained, gets stronger, but it's also a training in understanding and wisdom. To have the wisdom to understand how valuable it is to show up, to be present. To have the wisdom to understand it enough so that you enjoy at least the idea of showing up for yourself. There's a little story that has been very popular in the Vipassana world for the last 25 years, I think. And that's a story of a man who went to came back from Las Vegas with a sign that he took down from the wall, the casino or something. And the sign said, you have to be present to win. So, I don't know if it's an apocryphal story, but it's a nice story. And sometimes it can seem selfish to show up for yourself, but no one else can do it for you. And so there's a way in which we become not self-absorbed by showing up for ourselves, but actually it can be more helpful to be self-freeing, because more often if people who are self-absorbed tend not to be so present for themselves. But if you're really present, you can feel and sense and notice the suffering that's part of self-absorption, the tension that involves. And so hopefully show up for that, that can be released, can be let go of. And when you show up in all kinds of situations in life, different things will happen than if you don't show up. And it's certainly true when you show up for yourself. If you show up and somehow can put to rest the momentum of mind that takes you away from yourself, you're not paying attention to what's going on in your body, not paying attention to your mind or your heart, if you stop those kind of forces that take you away from yourself and are connected, then you can understand yourself better. And also, you can begin unwinding. And one of the things about showing up in my book is showing up means showing up with no agenda. Showing up, letting go of the kind of constant movement of the mind where we want something or want to stop something or try to make something happen. But just show up. And show up for ourselves. Find out what's here. I think of sometimes meditation as a process of letting ourselves catch up to ourselves. Because sometimes there's all this momentum of tension, of feelings, of thoughts, and all kinds of stuff that haven't really been processed fully. Because we're kind of barreling ahead into the next thing, the next moment, the next thing. And it takes a toll to always be ahead of oneself and into the next thing without each thing being processed fully and taken care of. And so meditation is a process of showing up and letting that stuff catch up to us. And there's an inner wisdom, of processing wisdom, that knows what needs to happen. You don't have to figure it out, even. You just have to show up. Make space for it. Make room for it. A friend of mine who... or people I know, and not just one person, but several people I know who work as hospital chaplains. And they're around people who are very, very sick and sometimes dying. And some of them sometimes think they're doing okay with all the death they see. Until they stop, and sit down to meditate, and they realize, oh no, I'm not okay. There's all this leftover feelings, all this heaviness and tension and sadness that's still kind of bottled up in there. And they didn't notice it because they hadn't stopped. So showing up is stopping to really find out what's going here. That's the first principle, showing up. The second principle of mindfulness is pay attention. So showing up just means stopping and being here for what's here. Allowing what's here to be here and let it move through you. The next one is to actually notice more carefully what is this that's moving through us. Pay careful attention. So what are the attitudes you have towards what's going on? So you showed up, you're here, but there's still, what's your attitude? Is there some subtle feeling that this is not acceptable? Some feeling that you want something different to happen? Is there some feeling of trying to make something different happen? Is there some way in which you reference what's happening in your experience to your self-identity? This means that I am marvelous. This means I'm lousy. This means I can't do this. This means, you know. So to notice those movements. Notice those what's going on. So to pay attention means pay attention to our body. Showing up into our body and paying attention. What's going on in this body? Is there tension? Is there leftover tension here? Is there holding? The body has a lot of information in its muscles. How we hold ourselves, what's going on, the tension, the posture. So we pay attention, what's happening here? And some people can spend you know, a long period of time not checking into their body. So it means checking in. What's here? What's going on? Taking stock. And so it might be done systematically, going through and feeling the face, the shoulders, the belly. What's happening in the body? Then there's investigating the your heart or your emotional body, how you feel. Some people are very much in touch with their feelings and some people hardly at all. And so sometimes it's very worthwhile to check in. What am I feeling right now? What's going on? And sometimes it can be a surprise for people to discover what they're feeling. You know, whenever I teach my intro to meditation class, when I do introduce people to the concept of mindfulness of emotions, I will often do at the beginning of the class a little guided meditation, kind of introduce the topic. And for the introduction to emotions, I'll have people close their eyes and then ask them to notice what their mood is that particular moment. And a number of people usually tell me later that they're surprised at what they discovered. They had no idea what they were feeling. Oh, this is what I'm feeling. I didn't know. I was so busy. I was so caught up in my thoughts. I didn't really know in some deep way what I was feeling, how I was. And then they're showing up for your mind. What are your beliefs? What are your attitudes? What's going on? To investigate, to look. What's happening here in some deeper way? So the investigation, the curiosity, the interest, more than just showing up. Okay, now that I showed up, what's happening here? The next one is to be honest. There are five principles. This is the third one. To be honest. And you might think that that would follow naturally from showing up and investigating. But I think that a lot of people have a tremendous capacity of kind of not being so honest with what they're really feeling, what's really going on, what's happening. Something's not working. This is not working. I've known people whose meditation wasn't working for them, and they didn't want to admit it because they were, you know, they struggled. I have to make it work. I have to be a good Buddhist. I have to do this. And it wasn't really working the way they were doing it. And that's been my case. I've beaten myself against a wall, a meditation wall, trying to be a good meditator when the meditation just wasn't working. Or at least the meditation really would have worked fine if I'd done it. But, you know, what I was trying to do, the meditation I was trying to do wasn't working. And I wouldn't admit it because, after all, I'm supposed to know what I'm doing. And so finally when I gave up whatever I was trying to do, that's when the meditation began. But it took a while, to be honest. I've also had some difficulty in my life being honest to myself when I'm angry. Sometimes I had these blinders on. In my self-image when I was younger, I'm not an angry kind of person, thank you. And so, since that was the image I had, I couldn't allow myself to see that I was angry. And so it took quite a while for me to really be able to notice when I got annoyed or irritated or angry, because I was so quick to brush it off or deny it or just pretend it wasn't there. Who, me? People would tell me, you know, you seem pretty irritated. What? Me? Me? So this idea of being honest, being willing to say, to name what's there, to see what's there, can be a very helpful, very important part of mindfulness practice and meditation. Sometimes being very honest about the attitudes we have, the beliefs we have. Sometimes being really honest about the self-concept that's operating when we're meditating. There might be a concept of that somehow that through meditation you're going to be a spiritual person. And this is really important, to look like a spiritual person. And so you get the right paraphernalia. In our tradition we have, you know, these shawls. They're great. Shawls are great. I have shawls at home. I shouldn't make fun of them. Then people with shawls won't want to wear them anymore. But so to be honest. So I hope that you're thinking about how this applies to your life outside. Show up, pay attention, and then be honest. What you're seeing, what's going on, what you're feeling. And then the fourth principle is to be kind. Be compassionate. And I think, you know, the world can't get enough kindness. It's like, in many ways, it's a hard world, difficult world for many people. And I know that being told to be kind is not, and then trying to force yourself to be kind doesn't work. But perhaps the idea of showing up and paying attention and being honest will make us more sensitive, more deeply, people's situation, our own situation, and people's situation, and to feel and sense the suffering, the difficulty, the challenges, the hard work that so many people make to get by in life, to try to work to make their life work. That just that kind of seeing that kind of prompts us to be kind, to make our effort, to be more compassionate, to be understanding. There's a wonderful quote by who was it? This man, George Booker Washington. George Washington Booker is the name.
Washington Carver.
Yes, George Washington Carver. Sorry. And he said something like, "It's important to be." Kind to the frail, compassionate to the aged, and sympathetic to the sick or something like that. Because one day, it'll be you. You'll be that way. So to be kind. And one of the remarkable things I discovered, or I think some people discovered, is that meditation practice, mindfulness meditation, tends over time, without wanting it, tends to awaken forces of kindness, friendliness, warmth, love within us. And it's almost as if we can kind of show up and let go of all the selfish agendas, all the desires, all the wants, all the resistances we have, all the fears, the defensiveness we have, and just be present in some very full and open way. That's as if the heart being that wants to be kind, wants to be loving. And I'm still amazed, you know, when I sit down and meditate. And after a while, it takes a while sometimes, but this warmth and love, kindness, seems to just kind of begin to kind of show up. It comes to me. So to be kind, and to be kind to ourselves when it is difficult, when we meditate. Meditation can be a great challenge. And it goes up and down. Sometimes it can be quite blissful and wonderful. And sometimes we're having to contend with, after all, we have to contend with ourselves. So it's going to be a challenge. And so to be kind, as opposed to being judgmental or self-critical, whatever we see, whatever is going on. And I think it's helpful, it's easier to be kind to ourselves, meditation, if in principle we are devoted towards showing up and being honest. I'm going to be, you know, the fact that you're going to be honest, I think, calls on us to be kind, or allows us to be kind. Oh, yeah, we're calling on the best part of who we are, the part that wants to be honest. Even though I can't do it very well, it's still my motivation, it's my intention. And so let me offer kindness, some acceptance, some warmth, some compassion to this part of who I am. So to sit with some feeling of kindness or compassion or warmth or towards ourselves, we meditate. And so we have in Buddhism the practice of loving kindness, which Shaila is going to teach in a few. I wouldn't be surprised if she talks about that next Sunday. I think she might have said she was going to, that's going to be a theme for her talk. But we actually in Buddhism we don't leave kindness to chance. But there's a way in which we also cultivate intentionally the forces of kindness within us through a particular meditation practice called loving kindness. So then. The last one is a very interesting. So we have four so far. Show up, pay attention, be honest, be kind. And the last principle of mindfulness, last aspect of mindfulness, which can be seen as, in a way to hold all four previous ones, but it's so significant that it should be its own category. And that is take the consequences. Take the consequences. It's a very mature thing to do. Don't try to wiggle out of the consequences. So, you know, we set in motion a life, certain chain of cause and effect. So, you know, that chain of cause and effect has a certain outcome that, you know, is likely to happen. And we can't necessarily avoid it. So if I go around being very busy some days, trying to be very efficient going around, it affects my shoulders, for me. My shoulders get kind of tight. And if I didn't sit down to meditate, and I say, well, I don't want tight shoulders, thank you. And that doesn't work. I have to kind of accept the consequences. And then it has certain tightness and discomfort, uncomfortable for a little while in my shoulders. And so I know that what I have to do is just take those consequences. The shoulders are tight because of how I live my life. And for some reason, I chose to go around and live that way, to be busy and a little bit tight as I went around doing my errands. And so now I have to kind of live with those consequences. And so living with the consequences means to be generous, kind, accepting, not to make it worse, not to kind of fight it or resist it or judge myself negatively for it. Just kind of take it. This is how it is. So that's with something as small as, you know, tension we might hold in our body. But there could be really big things. It's very easy to, without even planning on it, somehow to say something that maybe even that's mean to someone. Boom, it came out of our mouth. Gee. And now they're really hurt. So you feel bad, they feel bad. And you say, well, I'm going to go meditate so I can feel better. You know, I'm feeling filled with joy and light and just kind of float in the cloud. And because it's kind of yucky to feel this kind of non-spiritual feelings of remorse and regret and sadness and grief over what I've done and said to this poor person. So I'm just going to lock myself in my room until I float in the cloud. That is not a very mature thing to do. I think the mature thing to do is to take the consequences. And part of the consequences is I feel lousy. And to sit with that. So if you sit down to meditate, don't meditate to get out of that. But if the consequence of having done something that hurt someone is to somehow feel regret or remorse or sadness, is to take your time with it. Sit with that. Feel what it's like. Show up for that. Investigate that. Respect it. Be honest about it. Just be with it. There's a tremendous wisdom in the mind's own, heart's own processing. And so you show up, it'll process this stuff. You can trust it. You can trust your own inner life and process stuff. If you show up and are honest with what's there. If you do the Yogi's principles, show up, investigate, be honest and be kind. There's an inner wisdom that will help things go through. Just like people who grieve. When someone we love dies, there can be a grief process people go through. And some part of that grief process, you know, kind of has, it's a process. And that process can go through in a healthy way if you make space for it. Or it can go through in unhealthy ways if we try to block it or force it or stop it or something. So it is with all things. So show up and take the consequences. And some of those consequences sometimes don't get revealed until many, many years later. Some consequences don't get revealed until meditation gets really deep. And you might think that everything is fine, wonderful in your life. And you sit and you get calm and still. And, oh, this is great. This is good. And then you move to a whole new level of stillness. And boom, somehow in that deeper place of stillness, there was a chance for something that unfinished in your life to show itself again. Perhaps it's been some unethical conduct that you've done. And so maybe you thought, you know, 10 years ago you did this thing that caused some real harm. And you thought that you'd long forgotten it. You got away with that one, thank you. And no one noticed, everyone else has forgotten. So, well, that was, well, you know, lucky me. And then, but you know, deep down in your psyche, you know, it remembers. It's not finished. It's unprocessed. And so you go just get quieter and quieter, sometimes boom. Or sometimes in meditation practice you get quieter and quieter, more and more concentrated. And then you come to people come to a place where they just can't get any more concentrated. It's just not working. Why am I not? I'm puffing, I'm trying, I'm doing everything I can. All my teacher's instructions, I'm trying them. I just can't get concentrated. What's going on? Trying. And then suddenly, sometimes it's sudden, you know, oh, there's this big issue that I haven't looked at in my life. I need to look at it. I have to sit with it. I have to be present for it. I have to take the consequence. So we set in motion momentum, how we live our lives. And some of that momentum is external momentum, the effect we have on the world around us. Some of the momentum is in our internal life, where certain habits get built up, certain behavior kind of repeated. And you can't expect to sit down and meditate in any honest kind of way and not have to face and deal with that momentum. Many spiritual people would wish they could. They'd rather just kind of go and bliss out. But I don't think that's such a healthy thing to do. The healthy thing to do is to sit down, show up, and be honest about what's there, and then take the consequences, make space for it, allow it to be there. It doesn't mean that you sit there intentionally suffer more and more and kind of hit yourself, beat yourself with whips as you sit there, but rather to allow the inner life a chance to show itself and process itself and to be seen with honesty and then move through us in its own time, its own way. Now there's one step in this process of taking the consequences that the Buddha recommended to his son when his son was 7 years old. And has to do with taking the consequences. And that is, if you've done something that has caused harm to someone else, actually he said to someone else or to yourself, either way, the Buddha told his seven-year-old son that you should go and find someone and confess that to them. Lay it open to them. Reveal it to them, he said. And then in doing that, maybe get some advice, but in doing that, somehow then resolve to do better in the future. So to take the consequences doesn't mean that we don't learn from the our past. And it does not mean that we feel bad about the past, but rather it's about how can we take the past and what we've done and how can we do better in the future. And so this idea of confession, which is a kind of maybe a loaded word in English given certain religious backgrounds here in the West, is also part of the Buddhist tradition of somehow revealing what you've done, sharing it with someone else. And there's something about that it becomes the honesty of doing that sinks deeper into the heart or into the mind than if you just kind of keep it to yourself. It's a more full acknowledgement of something. And sometimes it can be quite difficult or embarrassing to go find someone that you trust and value and say, I need to tell someone about what's going on here. But that's part of taking the consequences. So that's going beyond meditation, but sometimes what happens in meditation requires us to go outside to deal with it. So, now one of the principles that is not, one thing that's not one of the basic principles of mindfulness is joy. And it would be nice, wouldn't it, if that was a sixth one? Be joyful. But I don't think you can just kind of, you know, be joyful like on command like that. But I found that each of those five aspects of mindfulness, I find certain kind of joy in doing them and knowing about them, being engaged in them. I find that there's certain, even when it's uncomfortable, and sometimes this process is uncomfortable, there's a joy in having a path, having a way, having a process, a practice to engage my life with. And so I feel a certain joy even when it's difficult. Wow, this is good. And it's hard. This is good that I have some way of engaging with what's hard, what's so difficult. So the joy of showing up, the joy of paying attention, the joy of being honest, the joy of being kind, and, believe it or not, the joy of taking the consequences. So I hope that this practice of mindfulness is something that you enjoy. And if not, in real kind of visceral kind of joy, at least joy in principle. In principle, you understand what a good thing it is. And then as you do it, hopefully you live into a certain level of joy and well-being, delight in being able to do these things and bring it into our life. I think these five things are things that mature us and deepen our life. And not only for ourselves, but also in our relationship to others in our community. To show up, pay attention, be honest, be kind, and take the consequences. So, those are my thoughts for today. What are your thoughts? We have about 10 minutes. We have about 10 minutes if anyone would like to say something or give a testimonial about any one of these. Or ask a question or anything at all, please. So out in the outer hall there.
So in reviewing the five characteristics of meditation, I recall my experience shortly after my son died. And prior to that, I was a pretty good meditator. I would come here, you know, my husband and I practiced for several years before he died. But after he died, I just could not meditate. I just couldn't do it. I tried over and over and over, and it would just cause so much pain to get to that level of experience. And so instead, after I, you know, tried for months, instead I decided to write. And eventually, I could get it out enough released on paper to the point where I could meditate.
Yeah.
But even then, I could only do it for short periods of time. So I thought that this might be helpful information. You know, we all grieve for something. And when the loss is significant enough, sometimes the routine practice just doesn't work.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's very important to realize that. And so part of the idea is, I think here, is to not think of meditation as limited to, or mindfulness is limited to meditation practice per se, but then to ask ourselves what is needed in what's needed. How do we show up in an appropriate way given how difficult it is? How do we live with this in a way that works for who we are? And sometimes meditation doesn't work. And sometimes certain situations, it just the life is so intense, like especially with grief, that we're kind of people meditating anyway. People are just dealing with it day to day, moment by moment, with the intensity of it, that sometimes it's just enough just to give space, go for a walk, and be present, and to put yourself into meditation practice can make it so intense that it's counterproductive even. So showing up might mean, you know, going for a long walks or writing, as you said. So it's important what you said. Thank you. Yes, please.
As far as you were saying about meditating and coming to really difficult issues or having difficult issues happen in your life, I'm amazed that it brings me so often to things that I had totally forgotten were very difficult or terrifying. And I don't want to admit to myself. I'm tough, you know. I don't want to admit to myself that I'm terrified. And yet, what a kindness it is to myself to enter that and to realize that there's a way of being with that. So I just really thank you for those five steps. I hadn't heard them before. Thank you.
Someone up here.
Well, I found it quite amazing that I'd heard these steps presented to me by a teacher that I thought the world of, and they've stayed with me, but I've applied them externally in conflict resolution with people. You know, I hadn't heard them so well expressed in terms of internal meditation. And so in terms of the external world, you know, to show up, pay attention, tell the truth when there's a conflict with another person, and listen.
and then let go of the outcome. But I can see how applicable these principles are, you know, across the border, whether it's an internal issue of getting in touch with some inner truth and conflict within, or working with other people in troubled situations. Mm-hmm. So it just has expanded it for me.
Great. Great, thank you. I mean, that's one of the things I was hoping to convey, is that you know, mindfulness is just a sensible thing. It's not meant to be some strange, esoteric, you know, even spiritual thing to do. It's just kind of a sensible approach to how to live our lives. Here on the front here.
I find it very useful to what some people call getting back to basics when things get complicated. If you just go to the basics, it can help you a lot. And I found what you were saying to be an expression of that approach. Something that's been on my mind recently, and what you said certainly can apply to, has to do with generosity. And this being the season that it is, the difference between expected generosity, which in some ways is sort of a form of extortion. and generosity.
My kids don't know that big word yet. Yeah. Well, I think what you're raising is, it's a very good thing to notice, you know, this thing about paying attention to ourselves and then being really honest. Because there could be all these shoulds that we're living under. I'm supposed to be, you know, generous, I'm supposed to be friendly, I'm supposed to be this way and that way. And then all those shoulds, we don't take the time to realize that actually I don't feel that way at once one bit. And to be honest about that, and given being honest about that, I don't want to be generous. What is that about? What's going on here? And given the fact that I don't want to be generous, what's the appropriate way that has some honesty, some integrity to it, in how I go forward here?
I was pondering the fifth of the five steps, take the consequences, and thinking about how, if one were to substitute the word take responsibility, what that would be in terms of similarity or difference there. I was wondering if you could comment on that.
It's a good question, and the answer that comes to my mind is that I was primarily talking about meditation practice, with the idea that you should maybe apply it to your life outside. But in meditation practice, I think there it's a little bit more in a receptive mode. So there, when you sit meditate, you just take the consequences of the momentum to feel it, as opposed to going and finding someone and apologizing or doing something, taking responsibility that way, action. But I think, yeah, taking responsibility is a very important thing. But that's not mindfulness. So mindfulness is a subset of something, of other things are needed for living a wise life. So maybe if I had done five principles of wisdom, maybe mindfulness would have been one, and taking responsibility would have been another. But I was just doing, you know, the subset of wisdom.
Thank you.
So a bit back behind.
My experience of being honest is that it is freeing. And what gets freed is this energy of living.
Great.
And that seems to energize for me my practice, mm-hmm. being honest. Mm-hmm. And thank you.
Thank you. And one of the... sometimes a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's also quite serious. I said this back. Sometimes in Buddhism, there's a kind of feeling that things are kind of relevant, relative, and kind of, you know, never don't have absolutely sharp lines or principles. It's more like it's all in the situation. You kind of situational ethics and all that. So, but I say that there's one principle, absolute. Ethical imperative in Buddhism that absolutely is unwavering, and that is that it's never okay to lie to yourself. So, you know, there's a lot of questions about, is it okay to kind of, it's appropriate sometimes to lie to others, you know, You know, that's, people discuss that a lot, and that's a whole topic in itself. But this thing of being honest, sometimes, you know, maybe it's not so wise to be honest out loud. And sometimes it's really wise to be honest out loud to others. But it's always wise to be honest towards oneself. Yes, please, all the way in the back, back in the outer hall. So Mike has to go to the outer hall.
Thank you. Could I ask you to say something specifically about the holiday season? We have these five steps, and starting with the dinner party tonight, it's going to be an emotional train wreck.
Sorry?
It will be an emotional train wreck without enough time to process all of this.
Well, the hope is that this will help the emotional thing. And one of the aspects of paying attention and, you know, knowing what's going on there and being honest is to know what our limits are. And sometimes it's healthy to say, well, this is my limit. Saying, this is a little bit too much now. I think I need to go spend some time in the bathroom. You know, or to offer to go wash the dishes. You know, just to sometimes being wise about our limitations is a very important part of you know, it took me a long time in my practice to realize that I had limits, and then to be willing to admit those limits, personal limits. You know, and say, you know, I don't have the. This is how much energy I have. This is how much emotional capacity I have for this right now. I think I need some quiet time. So that's one thing that can be helpful. So that kind of honesty. The other is the first one showing up. In my mind, has this quality of non-reactive presence. So rather than learning to show up. And not react to the situation. Learn to show up and be very, very equanimous or spacious or allowing. Simply to be there, sit there at the dinner table, and rather than being proactive in terms of talking and figuring out what needs to be done and taking care of people, just sit there and be present in the middle of it, and see then pay attention, see what's needed in that situation. Paying attention is a good one because sometimes the question is. Looking around at the people at the dinner party, the sit party, and paying attention, what's really going on here? Someone might be really angry about politics, giving into like every party they like to go into politics and be angry at some administration or other, and then you ask, what's going on here? What's really going on? It's so uncomfortable to be around this rant and rave. What's really going on here for this person? And you find out that that the rant and rave about politics. Is really a cover for a deeper frustration in their life. And maybe the thing to do is to just kind of go sit down next to them and say, you know, I hear, you know, you've had a hard year, as opposed to kind of engaging them on the politics thing. So, you know, so it's hard to do, you know, the whole holiday thing. I'm fond of a tenet that it seems to be, there's a form of therapy called family system therapy, where therapy doesn't look at the individual. Like if someone comes to a therapist has some major psychological difficulty, the therapist sees the client as being the canary in the mine shaft. And there's this family system, and just for some reason that person's the weak link in the family system. And you don't just fix the person, you have to actually look at the whole system, family system, in order to kind of make an adjustment with the whole system, otherwise doesn't work. And one of the tenets of this family system approach to therapy is that if one person in the family can practice non-reactive presence, the whole family system moves towards health. Isn't that neat? Non-reactive presence. So good luck.
So it's not actually a weak canary, it's quite a strong canary.
Maybe it's the weak link, but it's the strong messenger. To be grateful for the messenger. Okay. So I guess now we'll go home and do it. So I certainly wish you all a wonderful New Year. I hope that the New Year goes through well for you. We do have a New Year's Eve event. And so you're welcome to come here for a meditative approach to New Year's Eve celebration. And Brigitte Jelaine will lead it. She'll do the regular Monday evening schedule, talk, sit in the talk. And then from 9 o'clock on, there'll be some other events that are more in the kind of meditative spirit. So, and probably what will happen is people will meditate into the new year. And so, you know, the last bit just before New Year's. So, those of you who look at yourself, pay attention to yourself, show up for yourself, and then figure out, and then really honest about what works for you. Realize maybe the kind thing to do is just to come here and be quiet for New Year's Eve, as opposed to some of the alternatives. So, and I'll see you in the beginning of the year. Thank you.